From the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly radio show and podcast produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio CJLY and heard on radio stations around the world, including Cortez Community Radio on Cortez Island, British Columbia. I'm John Steinman. In October 2008, Deconstructing Dinner had the pleasure of spending time on Cortez Island with a group of young, enthusiastic adults who had just spent 8 months learning the intricacies of growing food using organic and permaculture principles. Cortez Island is located in the Strait of Georgia and can be accessed by a series of ferries originating in Campbell River on Vancouver Island. For over 20 years now, Linnea Farm has been offering a program that becomes the home to about a dozen students who learn from experienced growers before they too embark on their own paths of growing food and teaching others how to do the same. On today's broadcast, we meet those students and instructors to learn more about this unique program, its impacts on the students, and perhaps for us as listeners, can act as inspiration to develop similar programs in our own communities. Lucky for us, the students who took part in Linnea Farm's 2008 garden program were also talented songwriters and musicians, and we'll get the chance throughout the next hour to hear some of that wonderful music accompanying these recordings.
Try some rose hips. If you want to get a little more vitamin C in your diet, why don't you try it?
Before I came to Linnea Farm, I was living in Victoria with Tessa. I was working full-time on a farm, and we thought it'd be a great place to come and learn about how to grow food together and also with a whole bunch of other people who were interested in that too. We lived in a communal house before, but there wasn't as many people there interested in growing food.
Before I arrived at Linnea Farm, I was in California doing a permaculture course. It feels now like that was kind of the tip of the iceberg. That was just getting me ready to really be here and understand that permaculture, which is this kind of new word for really old practices, is just this amazing language of relationships and a way of relating to the earth and communities.
Before I arrived at Linnea Farm, I was living in Victoria with Mike, who's also in the program, in a household of really awesome people. And we were growing a small garden in our backyard. And I was just living and teaching kids about organic gardening in elementary schools and working with children and people with special needs and sort of just waiting for Linnea for a while. I'd known that I was going to come here for, well, I'd hoped I was going to come here for about 5 years before actually arriving. And I chose to come to the program because there are many inspiring graduates who live in Victoria who are doing really good work. And I'd been hearing about the program through some people who are just influencing their community and increasing food security and really inspiring people to look at where food comes from and how our environmental crisis and political crisis and everything just comes back to food.
Those are the voices of just some of the students who lived at Linnea Farm on Cortez Island in 2008. The 8-month experiential education program has been in operation for over 20 years, and during my visit there in the month of October of last year, I learned of the different paths that the students had taken to eventually lead them to the farm. Some of the students, as we'll hear in just a moment, had already acquired some growing experience through what is known as woofing, an international program that places willing workers on organic farms.
Before I arrived at Linnea Farm, I was living in Victoria and I applied for the entrepreneurship program through Life Cycles. It was a program that was giving me the opportunity for about 8 months to be learning about and create a sustainable business. I was focusing on creating a business based on urban edible landscaping. And so I was learning from a lot of people in the city as well as doing spin farming, which stands for small plot intensive farming. So I was growing food in people's backyards for myself as well as them, and then selling a little bit through Food Roots, which is an organization that distributes a lot of local food within Victoria. And then also I was doing some projects growing food for people, like giving people the opportunity to be growing food and composting for themselves. So I was setting up some gardens in people's backyards where they didn't have gardens, as well as setting up composting systems. But I didn't feel confident with my ability to grow food and with my extent of knowledge, because I had read a lot and I had helped out a lot of people, but I hadn't done a lot of projects independently. So I was sort of at this place of feeling like I knew quite a bit about growing food, but not enough to be where I was at in my leadership role. So I chose to come to Linnea so that I could learn some more.
Before I arrived at Linnea Farm, I was a stress ball from the city. I was working my for-profit job and my nonprofit contracts and doing volunteer work and probably working between 12 and 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this cycle was not a new cycle for me. Every year I would burn out and go to the land and usually woof. And I've had some very special summers woofing. And because of my special summers woofing and my great passion for photographing the natural world, I chose to come to Linnea Farm to really learn about growing food, because my woofing experiences taught me a little bit here and there about maintaining food crops, but I had never actually designed a garden or planted seeds and watched them grow, and was really pretty clueless about many things to do with growing food.
Before I arrived at Linnea, I was living in Edmonton, making money, trying to decide what to do with my life, basically. I'd done some woofing overseas and have been fascinated with food production and living with animals and living in association with your food. And a friend suggested Linnea Farm as a great place to learn more about the theory and the practicalities of growing food. So after working at the restaurant in Edmonton for a while, I was kind of desperate to actually know where the food came from, because it all came from the walk-in cooler, and Linnea very clearly shows us where food actually comes from.
Before I arrived at Linnea Farm, I was living in Calgary and spending some time with family and friends. I chose to come to Linnea Farm because I was living in Fernie for the last 10 years or so, in the most magnificent place, and getting to work half the year at a ski hill and half the work at a I was working at the time at a commercial greenhouse. And then I started working at an organic farm just outside in Hosmer, and there was one girl that wanted to apply to this program. She'd heard about this fantastic program. She came into the greenhouse and she said, you know, that program absolutely changed my life, changed everything of the way I saw food.
I think my journey to Linnea began about 4 years ago when I moved out to the West Coast. At the time, I was completing a master's in political theory at the University of Victoria, because I was really interested in understanding the way that power works in our society today, and the opportunities that we have in order to resist forms of power when they don't seem quite right to us. And so I started really trying to understand how some of the biggest changes that we seem to be able to enact are changes that occur closest to us in our own localities. And so I guess that's kind of also what started to get me interested in growing food and in some of the ideas of permaculture. So I came to Linnea because it's an opportunity to learn some of these skills and to do so in a community of other people who are also really passionate about doing the same, and then taking those skills back to wherever it is that we may go in 3 weeks' time and beyond.
Before I arrived at Linnea Farm, I was pruning fruit trees in the Similkameen Valley at a friend's farm. It was the first winter that I'd spent away from the city, and it was a quiet time, and it gave me lots of time to reflect on the steps I'd taken in the last few years. I'm a recovering engineer, and over the last couple of years, I've been exploring the ways in which I feel I can best contribute
to a healthy community.
You want to fix that heavy thing that's always been resting on your pillow. Try some willow. If you want to be hip. And if you cannot sleep, then steep up yourself a cup of chamomile for a while. If you want to be hip.
This is Deconstructing Dinner. Beyond the dozen students who took part in the Linnea Farm Garden program each year are the instructors. David Buckner has been involved in the program since its inception, and I sat down with David to learn more about the farm and how it came to be.
Wow, the beginnings of Linnea. I think I'd have to say it was an accident. There was a couple, Robert and Penny Cabot, that were traveling around North America looking at intentional communities, looking to join an existing community, I guess, and they happened to come to Cortez for other reasons and see this place. They heard a rumor that it was for sale, which in fact wasn't true, and they ended up reaching a deal to buy the place. But as far as the community, they found a community called the Texas Lake Community Society that was running a hostel down in Hope that they got excited by and wanted to join, but they wanted to have the community move here. That group of people didn't actually own the land they were on, and they were raising money to buy their own land. When I heard they bought this place with a licensed raw milk dairy, I came up right away, and I was herdsman on the dairy for the first couple of years I was here, and then I started growing garlic for market in the early 80s, I guess, and decided to start the garden program. 88 was the first year of the garden program, more or less as we see it now. Mm-hmm. It's an 8-month program. They come for the growing season, so they arrive the end of February and start planting seeds, and the idea is that they have the foundation skills to start the real learning, which goes on out in the world after they leave here and they're growing gardens of their own in whatever form. I guess our real hope is that we're sending out teachers.
Linnea Farm instructor, Adam Schick.
Okay, so one of today's major tasks is, we can cover that compost up, but that's not major. We're going to take that compost pile and that compost pile, spread this out as a base, and make one compost pile. So a couple of people on either pile forking stuff. You know, you're going to peel off the outside layer. You know, you're going to try to get the inside to the outside and the outside to the inside, thoroughly mixing everything. If we just leave these ones, it's also the other problem of being a little bit short on compost, right? So if we don't do something to sort of make these speed up a little bit, it's just going to make it even, you know, even the compost piles we have aren't going to be finished compost piles. And you guys can remember the different piles we use, that the more sort of broken up it is, the better, easier it is to work with later on in the year. When you got big chunks of corn and bits of fish, it's a little harder to work with, and it's all nice and crumbly and totally finished. So
each student has their own plot, so that they get the chance to experiment on their own. They plan out their garden, they eat what they grow, they water it, and they get support from the instructors who come around and once a week or so and give advice and pointers. And
right here, these are a few different types of pole beans. This one here is called Grandma Walters. It's a dry shelling bean that produces these big shelling beans that we've been eating in our stews lately. There's another variety of pole beans growing up here, which are just a fresh green bean.
So when you first walked in here, was it just bare plots that were already used the previous year and you had to do whatever it is you wanted with it?
Yeah, the gardeners of the previous year had put the garden to bed. So the garden student that was in this plot last year put a lot of work into it at the end of the season, built a lot of compost for me, cover cropped most of the beds, put a lot of mulch down to protect the soil over the rainy winter months. There were a few crops that he had left in the ground, but not very much, just some strawberries. And so it was essentially a blank slate for me to work with, but it wasn't just a blank slate. There was a lot of diversity in the beds that he had left me. Some of the beds had different cover crops in it. There was a cover crop of clover, a cover crop of rye, a couple of permanent mulch beds, a couple of beds that were mulched in seaweed. And so I had the opportunity to work with those different styles of bed preparation, and I was able to come up with some cool able to work on some interesting techniques of no-till gardening based on the different cover crop systems and mulches that were left here from the year before. And all the compost that they made me, these two big piles, was enough for all my needs within the garden. Mm-hmm. And so I've taken the same approach to my garden, and most garden students this year are as well, that they're trying to leave as much beneficial stuff in the garden for the garden students next year. And we've all built loads of compost and taken a lot of care to build up the fertility of our soil. Mm-hmm. And I'm planting this year a lot of crops to go over into the next year's garden. There's some leeks that are going to be overwintering. I planted a bed of lettuce, overwintering lettuce. Some fava beans that are going to flower early in the spring and produce fruit, and lots of parsnips, which I don't want to harvest too early because they don't really get good until the first frost, until like the sugars condense in the flesh. And mm-hmm. Got some corn over here. It's an old-fashioned sweet corn variety called Country Gentleman, which is completely different from any corn I've ever eaten before. It's got these rows that are all askew, and it's got no order to it whatsoever. They grow really, really big, fat ears of corn. We had one for Friday night dinner this past week that was bigger than my forearm, and we passed it around the table as part of a ceremony, and everybody took a bite out of it and gave a birthday wish to one of our friends on the island. I've got a variety of squash over there called Black Futsu. It's a Japanese heritage variety. It grows this big black squashes that I'm also saving for seed. There's a whole row of espaliered apple trees at the back of my garden. They were part of a student project.
An espalier is the method that they're trellised here?
Yeah, so there's a method of trellising apples in which their branches are spread wide and the apples are kept cropped quite small. It's a great example of being able to grow fruit in a very small space. It doesn't require a huge orchard space in order to get apples, but these little espalier trees can be just snuck into the little corner of the garden that gets a little bit of light. So these espalier trees were planted by students back in 1996 as part of their course on grafting.
This is Deconstructing Dinner. We were listening in on our October 2008 visit to Lanea Farm on Cortez Island, British Columbia. The farm offers an 8-month garden program for students wishing to learn more about growing food using organic and permaculture principles. We just heard from David Rothstein, one of the dozen students who were enrolled in the program. Each year, students are given their own garden plot to manage from seed to harvest, but students are also exposed to more production-oriented growing through the farm's production garden, which in part is used to grow food for the 22-member community-supported agriculture box program offered to residents on the island. During my time at the farm, I was also treated to the musical talents of the students there, some of which we heard earlier. And here's another student, Leah, lending her musical voice to Deconstructing Dinner before we wander off with the students to the farm's production garden.
This is February, guys, the song. This is March.
It's still snowing.
Never enough words to tell you what I know, and silence can speak loudly, but it's often hard to hold. And every time I'm with you, I find it hard to speak. These words I know don't seem to hold everything I mean, and there's not enough words for snow. There's not enough words for snow. There's not enough words to celebrate the glow, and there's not enough words for snow.
No.
Yeah, generally on Mondays we work together on the production garden during the morning when we stop and eat lunch. And we each have our own individual garden plots that we're given time to work on Monday afternoons.
Well, the garden looks pretty awesome at this point right now. Most of it's Tibet. That's sort of when we were joking about having production garden to the end of the month. We probably won't need to, but maybe a little weedy in that bed of leeks there. Those are the ones that are going to feed next year's garden students and us through the wintertime, or in the late winter, early springtime, you know. Those will probably be our wintertime eaters, and next group gets here, we'll probably be going, those are the leeks for you to eat, so wouldn't hurt maybe to do a little bit of weeding around them. So let's do a quick little walk down here. I think we're going to start in the greenhouse, and we'll just do a little walk around and look at stuff. Let's go to the greenhouse. For sure, in here we need to sift some soil. That's a major thing that has to happen. We need all those barrels full so we can fill up those flats in the springtime. And what are we gonna sift? Maybe we should start with the stuff under here. So all this stuff under here, so that's gonna be a couple people sifting, and that's a nice job. It's kind of wet, it's not too hot, and there's a lot of compost under there, so that should hopefully fill up the barrels. We don't have much vermiculite, but that's okay. And besides that, everything's sort of just, all the pumpkins are in here drying. There's some seeds in here. If these spent like a few days in the house, then we'd probably be able to thresh out the seed at this point. We just need it to be dry. The seed looks pretty good inside there. And this year I'm excited about this leek seed because we have two different leeks, right? We sort of took the year before, we were sort of running out, like sort of inbreeding depression, because we were just sort of saving Linnea leek seeds for so many years. We stuck a bunch of a different variety in there. The idea was that they'd cross-pollinate and we'd sort of bring a little vigor back into the Linnea leek line. We'll see what next year's leeks look like.
Each day at Linnea Farm begins with a rundown of the upcoming day's activities. And it so happened that the day Deconstructing Dinner visited the farm, the morning was greeted with an announcement from one of the students that the pigs had gone missing.
I watched the whole thing. Like, I can't see them anywhere. Normally they'd be, like, out doing their thing. But
they're swimming off island.
They're going south.
Mexico!
They're building huts. One has got straw.
One's on the phone,
looking for friends. One's mixing concrete.
Oh, like out of the hole.
They're gone.
Crest.
Yeah, they're gone.
They're not gone. They're just hiding.
Yeah, but it would be a good idea to bring them in so it's not too attractive.
Yeah, we want to eat them.
Wolves and cougars and things like that.
Yes, can't wait for that.
No, there are food. The wolves can't happen.
Did you get the cover crop seed?
I did.
Oh, wow.
I was wondering about that. I was thinking maybe we could sow that by hand out there and then rake it in and just trample all over it.
The idea here is that, I want to expand, right? I want more garden over the next few years. And
close to home.
We want to give Kirsten a permanent spot in the... There's another two-acre garden over there that's all fenced in, right? And there's been a potato co-op here for some 25 years now, where 20 to 25 island families pay sort of like a membership fee, and that helps cover the cost of the machine time, and we've used some different organic fertilizers and stuff in the past to sort of boost the soil. And so they come to 5 work bees. We have a planting work bee, 2 weeding work bees, a big harvest work bee, and then a composting work bee. And these are like Saturday afternoons or Saturday mornings, sort of throughout the summer. David and myself end up doing a lot of the, we do all the ground preparation with the machine and stuff, so you're kind of just showing up to sort of do the work at hand. It's a pretty amazing experience because, you know, you get 20 families and all their kids and everybody running around, and the work goes pretty quickly. So that garden and the 4-year rotation, what's happened is we've planted hazelnuts, and Kirsten, one of the other stewards on the farm, has a seed garden, and it's been really hard for her to sort of have to move the whole garden because there's a 4-year rotation in there. So if we can expand that to put another couple acres of production out here,
that garden can become sort of like a more of a vegetable garden. I'm already, for next spring, I'm going to do a few big beds of carrots out there for overwintering. And what we have here, we're about as far away on the farm as we can for the lower garden where we started our morning off, and that's a really wet by the lake. And out here it's a lot drier because we're so far away from the lake, and the water table is a little lower, and the soil is a little less sort of silty. It's a little bit more sandy out here, where it's a really silty loam down at the bottom of the garden. So we're out here today is to sow some cover crop. I came in here with the tractor with the rotavator on it, and I've sort of broke up the sods. But you don't want to leave your soil bare like this for the winter, especially on the coast, because every time it rains, everything starts to just leach out. So by sowing a cover crop, that crop sort of grows, it sort of holds the nutrients, and instead of the water just sort of rushing through it, you have plants there to sort of hold the nutrients, keep your soil together, because anytime you have bare soil, it sort of erosion happens through all the elements, sun, wind, rain, you know, so we put a cover crop on it to protect it. Normally we sow ryegrass, and rye is a great organic matter accumulator. It grows really fast, and it's also one of the least expensive cover crops you can buy. It's sort of grown in Canada, where out here, what we have to do, we can't grow rye because we have Canada geese come in really big time, right? And one of the favorite things, geese, is fresh grass. So out here, where no one's living for the winter time, if we sow rye grass, it's just basically asking, just saying, here's a goose salad bar. And that's not what we want. We want to have this soil be held. So we grow hairy vetch. Now, vetch is quite expensive. 50 pounds of it, so I think we paid almost $150 for it. And on this half an acre, we're going to sow about a third to a half of it. We're going to sow a little more than we normally do because the ground is so new and there's lots of sod in there. And because it's so wet now, we can't get the tractor on it. I would have liked to do this 2 weeks ago. We'd ordered the vetch, but the vetch just didn't come to our local feed supply store. So here we are today, October the 6th, which is about a week two later than maybe I would have liked to sow this. But, you know, that's the way things work out. You do things when you can. So, we'll just go out there and sow the cover crop. And then our job's basically just going to be to cover up the seeds and sort of tamp it down again. So there's quite a lot of ground there. That's why there's quite a few of us here.
So here's the vetch.
Just going to open this sack up. It's little tiny little black seeds. And you pretty quickly understand why it costs so much for the vetch, because I could imagine how long it would take me to, even if you say if we left this half acre here, it would, you'd definitely want a machine or something to harvest it, because it's like the world's smallest looking little pea seeds. They're all very black and hard. Beautiful. And the nice thing about vetch is it's like the rye grass, it doesn't really... If you use two-year-old rye, a lot of times it won't germinate in the seed. But vetch, I guess just because of the way the seed is, it lasts for quite a few years. And vetch fixes nitrogen. And I have, this is one of those like iconic fun farming machines. This is a, you put the seed in there, and then you stand there, and I crank this thing, and it flies the seed out everywhere. And it all depends. It's one of those things you sort of get used to doing. The harder I crank this, the further things flow out there. So I'm just going to do a little pass here.
So I get here at the edge,
and I basically, and it's sort of a speed. You kind of have to like pick a line, and you can sort of see this tractor, the tractor tires have sort of left me a space. So I'm basically going to pick a point there on the end, and I'm going to open this thing up. And I got to make sure I get it right to the very outside edge. And it's so it's going about 8-10 feet on the left side of me, and only about 4 feet on the right side of me. Vetch is hard because it's a little black seed, really hard to see once you spread it out there. And when you get to the end, you do sort of a little bit of a bow, and you're done. And so I was throwing the vetch out to about here. So then I walk myself about 10 feet over.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly radio show and podcast produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY. I'm John Steinman. On today's episode, we've been visiting Lanea Farm on Cortez Island, British Columbia, where for over 20 years, an eight-month-long garden program is offered to students wishing to learn how to grow food using organic and permacultural principles. Instructor Adam Schick has been heard here teaching students on how to sow a cover crop. Adam has been living at Lanea with his family since 2000 and is also a graduate of the garden program himself and enjoyed the farm so much he chose to return after leaving the garden program in 1998. If you missed any of today's broadcast, it is archived on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the November 26th, 2009 episode.
Now we're going to cover it up. And the rule of thumb is twice the depth of the seed, right? So here we're just... I just sort of want to make sure that some of those seeds have been covered, right? So what we do, you don't want to just rake it all one way, but we sort of want to work sort of strategically, right? Yeah, starting at this side and working like a 4-foot strip. And it's okay to walk all over it too, right? Because that's just going to help knock things down. But so just getting those seeds just in the surface. I'm going to go get myself another rake. Well, I guess that's the nice thing about being here at the farm is we're not sort of driven like most farms to sort of make a mortgage payment or pay for the equipment. All the equipment's from like the 50s and 60s, and we just sort of keep it limping around. We do just enough to sort of keep the machines and everything running, but the whole society, Lanea Farm Society, we're a non-profit society. So the idea isn't anyone to get rich. What's supposed to get richer is this piece of property. And because we don't own it, we're stewarding it. Like, I hope my kids can be here and my grandkids can be here. So I'm looking forward 2-3 generations where when you're in business and you got a $50,000 mortgage payment and a new combine that you've just paid for, then all of a sudden you are behind that brick wall because you've put yourself behind that brick wall. And I'm not saying I have total respect for anyone that grows food, like, on whatever scale. But, when you're all tied up with the banks and everything, I realize how stressful that is, but it's people want to eat good food, and there's lots of ways you can transition your big farm slowly into something that's sort of more organic and sustainable, and you don't have to do it all just at once. Right here we have all these young students, and that for sure helps me. I'm not an old man yet, but it really helps having people in their 20s and coming to the farm and being excited about it again. Like, when you put a seed in the ground, it's like, and it comes up, it's a huge epiphany. You're like, wow, I did that. And it's just a pretty amazing feeling. And I think as you farm more and more, you get more and more involved in like trying to worry about how much money you're making and the future, what am I going to do next year, and what are the prices of pork bellies or whatever it is. And you stop forgetting about how absolutely amazing and miraculously the things are that you're doing, and you get sort of jaded and you can't see it anymore, and then your kids don't want to do it because you're unhappy doing it. I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and both of them are amazing gardeners. Like, my wife's sort of a herbologist, and she knows all, like, I go into the garden and my girls know way more about the medicinal plants and stuff going on. They know when a carrot's ready, they know how to plant a carrot, they know how to do a lot of stuff because they've seen me doing this stuff with my wife, and we've been excited about it all the time. So it's something they want to do. I'm not bitter about it. I'm excited about it. So hopefully that rubs off on everyone that I come in contact with. And through that excitement and all these people learning these skills, that it's just going to sort of spread and get more and more and more. And, you know, if the big farms can't support us, well, we'll have to start tearing apart our neighborhoods and our front yards and our backyards. And yeah, the CSA, actually, my partner got a grant from the Vancouver Island Health Authority. And one of them was like to encourage a farmer to start a CSA. There's no capital costs. She just got a little bit of money to help me with sort of the newsletters and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's just one of those things that finally, even the government's recognizing the fact that if you eat healthy food, you live a healthy life, you encourage people to be outside, garden, to grow things, that in the end, you don't have to pay as much to... for cancer rates, people are healthier, there's no heart disease. Like, how long has it taken us to figure that out? It's like a no-brainer, but
finally, the sort of the bigger society, if you want to call it, starting to realize, like, wow, food's really important. Hopefully we haven't realized this just at the last minute before everything just sort of goes to shit. But even if it does go to shit, I'm really excited, because what you're going to have is you're going to have this. You're going to have people out in fields making food for themselves. And there'll be just less machine stuff, because that's just the way it's going to go. And I mean, I'm really encouraged. I think about the shit hitting the fan, or whatever you want to call it, and I look at all these pastures, and I think of all the people that live on Cortez Island. It's like, you know what? We'd just have a really big garden program that year. There'd be 70 of us. We'd all have forks. And hell, we'd grow enough food for ourselves. And I actually really looking forward to sort of that reality. I mean, I'm happy, and I'll live in this one. But change doesn't scare me. In fact, I'm really encouraged by change. And one of the things we teach here is permaculture. And I think one of the best things is, like, if, say, stuff starts to go wrong, if there's enough people with a permaculture sort of mindset where there is no problems, there's only solutions. And if there's enough people like that on the ground when things get a little bit crazy. So it's like disaster response. If you have the skills to be, okay, everyone's panicked right now. Don't worry. How about we go outside? We break up some ground. We'll mulch your yard. Like, there's lots of amazing positive ways to deal with it. Even just sort of like organizing composting toilets when the sewer systems don't work anymore. Mm-hmm. There's no problem that a good designer, a human, cannot. We can figure it out. We've got ourselves in this situation. I think we can get ourselves out of it. No problems, as long as there's enough people that have enough faith in our species and the planet. Because all this stuff, it's humans that have the problem. The planet. No problems. To humans.
Deconstructing Dinner arrived at the farm on a Sunday, and coincidentally is the evening that the students had already gotten into the routine of listening to Deconstructing Dinner on their local Cortez community radio station. Sure enough, it was that evening that the tables had turned, and Deconstructing Dinner was in their kitchen recording them as they prepared a local food potluck. The meal lent a nice glimpse into the lessons learned at the farm that go beyond just growing food, and extend into the importance of preparing and sharing food together.
I brought to the local food potluck some rye that was planted in the fall of last year by one of the garden students here at Linnea Farm. And I decided to let the rye grow this year so that I could harvest it. After I harvested it, I put it in some boiling water for about an hour.
Local water?
Yeah, it was ocean water that Brendan brought, because it's nice to have some salt.
Mm. Me and Mike decided to collaborate on making some mashed foods, so we went out to the garden and we both harvested some squash, and I harvested squash from a Hugo pile, which is like a really big compost pile that you make, and I planted those squash really late, but because the squash plants were growing in the compost pile, they ended up producing quite a few squash. So we brought all those squash in, and then we got some milk that came from Sunday the Cow that was milked by one of the students today. And I made some mashed squash.
I brought a chile coyote salad, which was a spaghetti squash that has taken over the student plots. In the lower garden, has these large watermelon-sized squash that produce kind of noodle-like textured noodles. And it has carrots and beets and a lot of other vegetables from my plot and the production garden, as well as yogurt from the cow and some fresh toasted coriander.
I mashed potatoes from the Potato Co-op, which is actually older institution here at Linnea Farm than the garden program itself. It's been operating for probably somewhere between 20 and 25 years. There's about 25 families from the island who are members of the co-op, and we get together about four times per year to work during an afternoon. And the product of that beautiful festive labor is all the potatoes we can eat for the entire winter, which are stored in the root cellar here at Linnea Farms, and which are available for people to come and eat throughout the year and to feed their families.
I'm staying at Linnea with Michael, and not Linnea, Blue Jay Lake. So everything that we brought was from Blue Jay Lake, and we put it in a salad, and it was a carrot, apple, and grape salad. Oh, and one green pepper. And everything was picked at Blue Jay Lake today.
I brought a chicken casserole kind of thing, and the chicken was from last year's laying hens, and there were eggs from this year's laying hens, and milk and thyme and onions and cauliflower and broccoli and green peppers from the garden.
My mom and I harvested probably about 6 or 7 different types of salad greens and a whole bunch of nasturtium flowers and I think maybe 6 different types of tomatoes and made a big salad with a blackberry, kefir, fennel, garlic salad dressing.
So I have food in my mouth, so maybe I'll finish chewing.
Yeah, deconstruct your dinner.
Yeah. Well, I can probably do it. I arrived today, so didn't really have much time to prepare anything from any garden that I don't have. But I was at Natural Pastures Cheese on Friday, where I bought the buffalo cheese, water buffalo cheese, with the milk that came from Fairburn Farm in Duncan, a Natural Pastures, which you all probably know is in Courtney. And they also have a cheese called Amsterdammer, which is the other cheese that was on the plate. Mm-hmm. And then the crackers are from the Kootenai Bakery, which is a workers' co-op in Nelson, that they bake these crackers there. The grain is not local because they can't get it yet, but next year they'll be a member of the Grain CSA, so maybe some of that grain will be local next time. And then there were tomatoes from, is that your plot? Or
from Production Garden.
Production Garden, and some basil from your plot.
Yeah.
From David's plot.
I made a soup for the local food potluck. In it, I put potatoes, sunchokes, some wild chanterelles that I just harvested this afternoon, some ocean water, some milk, bay leaves from Martha's garden, a woman on the island, and leek bulbs. I never knew that leeks had bulbs, but they produce these little bulbs at the base of their stalk after they go to seed. And that was a really exciting discovery the other week, so we harvested a whole bunch of leek bulbs.
I brought pumpkin pie without the pie. I essentially just roasted a pumpkin in the oven filled with milk. And we're going to have it for dessert.
Stories I'm telling are now unique to me. Sun is always rising, waking up the sky. All the dreams I'm after leave me asking why. Why don't we worship the sun? Why instead do we make heroes out of warmongers and guns? Why?
Of all the things that we've learned, I can say that some of the ideas of permaculture have really resounded with me.
The most impactful lesson I've learned during my time here at Linnea is the idea of phenology, which is observing how there's a very strong cycle of time and evolution of the seasons within nature, and that one can understand the different events that take place in a garden by watching how nature evolves alongside your garden. For instance, we understand here in the garden at Linnea that when the Gravenstein blossoms bloom in early spring, that the cabbage root maggots start to lay their eggs around the base of the cabbage plants. And so we time our activities in the farm to correspond with that incidence in time. So as soon as we see the blossoms on the Gravenstein apples blooming, then we know that we have to take actions to protect our cabbages from these root moths.
It's really changed my mind, like going back to the city and walking into a standard grocery store. If, you know, we visit Campbell River or something like that, I'm really squeamish about eating non-organic, processed foods, things that I don't know where they came from. So it's had a huge impact on me, knowing where my food came from.
Can I hear the voices that they never knew were there, and why? Why don't we worship the clouds? Why instead do we make violence with our patriotic vows? And sing to me a recipe for what our lives will be. All the air is poison and the streams are all diseased. Will we be like the salmon with no life to spawn? Cause they dammed up all the rivers and the trees are all gone. And why don't we worship the sea? Why instead do we see dollars in the rings around the trees?
The most impactful lesson I've learned during my time here at Linnea is about observation. I feel like living in an urban setting really lends itself to needing to constantly move and constantly do and constantly think and constantly react. And a skill I was really missing for myself was the ability just to observe and watch how things work. And it's one of the skills I think that the program really wants to impart to the students, and we begin the year with a silent walk up the local cliff here at Linnea, and a big part of that is just observing what's happening in the natural world.
The most impactful lesson I've had here during my time at Linnea has probably been milking a cow. Because I haven't spent very much time with animals in my life, and I really haven't been around large creatures whatsoever. So it's been really amazing learning about building a relationship with such a large animal and also building trust with them. And then I've been blown away by how much they've been giving to me as well as the community with all of the milk and yogurt and cheese that we've been eating.
Why don't we worship the stars? Why instead do we see life as just a number on a chart?
The most impactful lesson I've learned during my time here has been about how plants are related to so many different things that I learned about in high school that I never quite grasped, like sine waves and this kind of mathematics stuff that I never paid a lot of attention to. Now, through this course, I've sort of tied some of those things that I wasn't interested in high school to growing food, so it's got me more interested or reawakened an interest in all of the stuff that people tried to teach me in the past and I just wasn't ready to learn it.
Kind of impossible to say what the most impactful lesson I've learned here is, because there's millions of them. Living with 11 people, it's like living with mirrors all the time and learning how to function in community is life-changing and totally inspiring and challenging and frustrating and invigorating. And how do we live together and create relationships with each other and with our food?
But your blood, it is still real, and I don't need to know your name to know that you are part of this great earth from which we came. Does it dance when you feel in love? And why do you impose your vengeful rule from above?
The most impactful lesson I've learned during my time here, well, there's so many, but definitely seeing and learning about all the different systems that keep me alive, whether it's like a food system and where my food comes from, and community and how the community is structured and how that provides the water and cleaning facilities and food systems that I need. And also looking at tools, like I was just so excited today realizing how excited I am about sickles and just the simple tools that a lot of my ancestors and parents and grandparents were familiar with and had been using for many generations, and just sort of rediscovering those through the program is something that's valuable.
Why don't we worship the rain? Why instead do we force people to grow out landed on a plane, then why? Why don't we worship the rain? Why don't we just go outside and play and play and play? Truth is not real unless it keeps the prophets high. But by God, I know that God is more than just another wealthy white man in the sky. I create when I feel alive. I create to give birth to music and to celebrate all life. And I know that your heart beats blood. I know that you were brought into this world to make love.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, where we've been listening to students who were enrolled in Linnea Farm's 2008 garden program. Linnea Farm is located on Cortez Island, British Columbia.
Some beer making. They get really excited about this.
From here?
From, yeah.
Do they know that it's beer?
I think they can sense that it's a little bit alcoholic and a bit sweet. I think they're gonna like it.
Garden program founder David Buckner on past graduates of Linnea Farm and where they are now.
One of our youngest participants was 15, I think, maybe 16 when she started. She went on work here at Hollyhock and does her own garden business for other people on the island and has just left the island. But she is a very accomplished gardener now. We're talking, you know, 20 years ago. Jeff Johnson, who has worked for years at the Victoria Compost Education Center and now started his own nursery business. And, you know, is far more knowledgeable now about a lot of permacultural plants than myself, you know, went through here. And, oh, Christopher Shine in the San Francisco Bay Area has been doing a lot of work with in poorer communities, getting people involved in gardening. And David Katzel, who's now he's working with Glen Valley Community Farm in Abbotsford. And so, yeah, our graduates are going on to make a difference.
My time here at Linnea has definitely encouraged me to be a farmer. I am farmed and dangerous. I'm in it for good. I realize that it's the greatest contribution that I can make to community sufficiency and towards a just world.
My time at Linnea Farm has definitely encouraged me to be a farmer. I've had a few visits to the city, and my favorite thing to say to people who are constantly wanting to know what I do for a living to make money is that I'm a farmer. And I feel like it's a revolutionary act in our North American culture to be a farmer. And all the farmers that I've met, most of them have been joyfully, amazingly vibrant, happy people. And I feel a lot of pride in growing food. And I may not be a farmer in the sense that I'll commit myself to growing huge fields of food, but wherever I am, I hope to be farming something. On some scale, and I hope to support other farmers.
I think, just like Kim and Leah said, I definitely want to be farming in my life, but I really want to be encouraging people with my skills to be growing food for themselves and understand how to be practicing permaculture within their own lives.
Has my time encouraged me to become a farmer? I have a hard time with calling myself a farmer or saying I want to be a farmer, because the picture I have of my life in the future is even, it's more than just growing food. It's like, I would say homesteading more than farming, maybe because of all the crazy farms and industrial farming practices that I picture when I hear that word. But I definitely want to grow food in my life and live with people in a way where we can put our energy towards creating healthy environments and sharing with each other.
Have I become encouraged to become a farmer? To become a grower, for sure. I really resonate with what you guys said about not wanting to be called a farmer. And I was thinking about that as you were talking. It's because farming, in my mind, also implies some exploitation. You know, farming means just trying to wring every little bit out of whatever resource you're using. You know, you farm it up. But I'm really encouraged to become a grower. And I don't think I could ever go back to not having at least a good portion of my diet coming out of the land around me.
And my time here has definitely encouraged me to become a farmer. I'm not sure, as well as Leah said, if I want to call myself a farmer, but I definitely want to focus my life around growing food and creating the systems that keep me alive myself. So using animals and growing fiber and making my own clothes and doing art and growing food and just practicing life on a really local level. So if that means being a farmer, then definitely I want to be a farmer.
Has your time at Linnea encouraged you to become a farmer? See, when I hear the word farmer, I'm from a family of farmers, so I don't associate it with the machine that farming's become. It's too bad that it's just caught up in this money round and it's not about just feeding people. I don't know, we were grain farmers and then they're cattle farmers now, and it doesn't resonate the same way to me. So has it encouraged me to become a farmer? I think I've been a farmer my whole life, but I really appreciate so much of what it means now to grow the food that I can sustain on. And a lot of people have inspired me an awful lot about how much it might actually take, and also the amount of work that we can get done in an hour. It's unbelievable, some of the things that we've been able to go and do in 1 hour and just kind of devour some weeds in a garden or something like that. It's been really amazing to feel just kind of going like locusts.
Will I become a farmer because of this experience? Well, what I really respect about farming is that what farming offers us is precisely that relationship. You know, it offers us some skills that we're able to use to, build our communities strong and healthy again. So, if that can be considered farming, then that's something that I want to always carry forth with me.
If you want to be hip, try some rose hips. If you want to get a little more vitamin C in your diet, why don't you try it? If you want to be hip, if you want to fix that heavy thing that's always been resting on your pillow, try some willow. If you want to be hip, and if you cannot sleep, then steep up yourself a cup of chamomile for a while. If you want to be hip, got a bellyache, for goodness sake, eat yourself a chunk of ginger root, so you don't puke, if you want to be hip.
Today's broadcast of Deconstructing Dinner is archived online at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the November 26th, 2009 episode. A thanks to Linnea Farm for hosting Deconstructing Dinner and for sharing your thoughts, music, and inspiration. Thank yous go out to David Buckner and Adam Schick and students Mike, David, Sarah, Corey, Leah, Jonathan, Tessa, Meg, Brendan, and Kim. And to all of those friendly animals we heard earlier. That was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded at Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake. This radio show is provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.